Hello, Les Raymond here with the Mindful Movement. Whether you are about to enjoy one of Sarah's beautiful meditations or dive into a podcast interview, I would like to remind our community that the best way to support the Mindful Movement is to support the companies that make this happen. Sarah and I are very picky about the companies we choose to work with, and we are grateful to have the relationships we have and to share them with our listeners. You can learn more about our affiliates through our website by clicking on the Favorites tab. We are excited to have recently added Sun Lighten as an affiliate. They make state-of-the-art infrared saunas, and their founder, Connie, came on for a recent interview if you would like to listen. Our Sun Lighten sauna has been a family favorite for over a decade. Some of our most popular affiliates are the Grounding Mats from Ultimate Longevity, which we sleep on every night, and the Apollo Neuro, which Sarah is now wearing daily to help manage stress. When you support these brands, you in turn are supporting the Mindful Movement and helping Sarah and I continue to devote our time to this passion. Whether you check out these companies or not, I just want to say thanks again and reiterate how grateful Sarah and I both are for all of the support over the years. I hope you enjoy the episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond. Thanks for joining me today for another episode. Today I have Aaron Johnson on the show. Aaron and Sarah have been working together on a side online project, and Sarah said we should reach out and have a conversation. It seems like Aaron and I speak a little bit of the same language. So she is from PilatesArtistry.com. She's a Pilates instructor, and she has a very interesting story that she's been embarking on recently of using breath to heal, or at least reduce dramatically, her symptoms of asthma that she's dealt with for a very long time. So I find these healing stories very inspirational personally. I like to hear them and I like to share them, just as like I like to share mine. So I hope you do get something out of this conversation. It seems like Erin and I speak the same language, and she's very passionate about what she does, and she's integrating her breath practice more and more into how she's helping her clients. So I hope you guys enjoy the show. All right, everyone. I have Aaron Johnson here today, the Pilates artist. I'm really excited to chat. Aaron has been working with Sarah on an online program, and Sarah mentioned that we should reach out to her. So I'm excited to hear a little bit about her story. Aaron, please say hello to the Mindful Movement audience.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So you are known as the Pilates artist. How long have you been into Pilates as a practice?
I was actually just writing something today about that, and it's been 20 years. So I started after the birth of my child 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're a veteran.
Yeah, I would say so.
So you were mentioning before we hit record here that you have like a history of asthma and how you kind of healed that through breath practice. And I find that fascinating. I myself in the last few years have taken, I guess, a deeper dive into breath, and I've been really, really blown away by the power that we kind of walk around with in our own body and what we could do. So I'd love to hear more detail about that journey, but maybe you could tell us kind of how you got to where you are now first. And I guess you're a studio owner in the Chicago area, and then you run online like teacher training courses.
Yes, I like I said, I've been doing Pilates for about 20 years, and I owned my own studio now, my brick and mortar studio, for 4 years. And I've had a training program. I used to have my training program at somebody else's studio before this. So I have just done in-person training for, you know, I do teacher training, teaching people how to be Pilates teachers, but I'm transitioning right now. And that's part of what I'm learning in the group with Sarah. I'm transitioning to putting my teacher training online.
Is that basically a result of the pandemic situation? Just
well, kind of forced it, to, or? It is, but I also think that it's more efficient. So I love teacher training, and I love kind of seeing people put this puzzle together and like how, you know, how the Pilates system works, and seeing people learn and become their own, you know, their own teacher. But it is a lot of time, and it's a lot of talking, and it's a lot of in-person energy. So if there's a way to, you know, teach some of the exercises where we can teach some of the exercises online, and then you can do some meeting with the people to kind of problem solve things, I think that will save a lot of time for everybody and a lot of energy. And actually, I think it'll make it probably better. And then you meet, you know, you can meet in person when I think everything is over and work on, you know, how to teach people how to touch. Eventually you can touch other people at some point.
How dare you?
Right.
So what got you into Pilates in the first place?
Basically after I was 26 when I had my child, and I wasn't super into exercise before that. I worked out, but just to like get it in, you know, I did my 30 minutes a day, 'cause that's the way I was like, I grew up. I just was like, do the exercise. And I didn't really think much of it. And then I had a really kind of hard pregnancy. And after I had my child, I like felt so weak. I'd never felt this weak before in my life. And, you know, they tell you not to lift things over a certain weight. And I mean, I could barely lift like the bulk of paper towels I was buying, you know? So I knew there was something wrong with my body now, and it just didn't feel how it felt before. And I was still in my 20s, you know? So it was like, there's something going on. And I just was I started reading about core work and all that. And I actually did something horrible that you're not supposed to do before I found Pilates. I was just trying to do sit-ups all the time, because I thought that I needed stronger abs, because you know, you don't have those when you're pregnant. And doing like the amount of sit-ups I was doing after I had my child is not recommended. It's not good for you. So I found like a DVD at Target, and I started doing Pilates on my living room floor.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I fell in love with it because I got stronger. And then I eventually started doing mat classes at a gym. And then I started doing private sessions at a studio, and then became obsessed because it's amazing. And you just feel stronger and feel really good. And then everybody that I knew was like, well, maybe you can, you know, start teaching this, because we don't want to hear about it anymore. Yeah. talk about Pilates to everybody. And, you know, people were also very encouraging that they thought, so I was passionate about it. So yeah, that's where it all started.
For the listeners that maybe aren't familiar with Pilates, do you have like a short way to kind of describe, give a description, if you were trying to define what it is?
Yeah, I mean, so this is why I named my studio and my company Pilates Artistry. Pilates is a system of exercises that a man named Joseph Pilates linked together. Some of the exercises were already in existence. Some of them came from gymnastics and came from like Greco-Roman wrestling. We have a lot of rolling exercises. You know, there's the whole mat routine is on the floor. And if you look at the exercises, some of them look like they come from yoga. Some of them look like they come from other disciplines. And from everything that I know about Pilates, these exercises were part of European culture at some time. And then Joseph Pilates linked them together and created some new exercises and put them into a system. And the whole system is based on spinal movement. So we teach core, and the core is your spine and your diaphragm and your inner muscles. It's not your abs. So every movement goes from your midline, right? Your spine and everything as close to center as you can be, and then radiates outward. And every exercise is connected your whole body, and it's all total body exercise. So it has a good reputation of being healthy for people's backs. You know, people come to us after back surgeries and after back injuries because we're focused on the spine.
Gotcha. So you mentioned, I guess breath is like a big component of Pilates. I remember going through some teacher trainings for it back in the day. This was, I don't know, maybe like 10 or 15 years ago, like a couple weekend long trainings. Maybe it was like Bat One and then Reformer One. Mm-hmm. I don't remember specifically, but I remember that there was definitely a breath component. Was that like your entry point into having a breath practice or?
Not at all. The breathing that's taught in Pilates is not, I don't recommend it actually. So it was not good for an asthmatic to do that breathing. I won't say that it's bad for everybody. It just was never helpful for me. I think the breathing in Pilates is really, there's two components of it. One is just the basic like exhale and exertion, which people do in a lot of other disciplines as well. And there's a lot of exhaling out of the mouth. And I've since found out that that is not healthy and that's not really advantageous to doing the exercises. And there's a lot of people do a lot of different breathing styles in Pilates. And Mr. Pilates, Joseph Pilates had designed a lot of exercises to do some breath holds. And I'm doing breath holds in the breath work that I'm doing now, but he had the breath holds on the inhalation, like you would do if you were diving into water. We just know more now about breathing than we did when he designed the breathing to go with the exercises. So things
I'm personally advanced. Like obsessed with breath holding.
That's the practice I'm using. So it's all breath holding.
So
you might love it.
I might. Yeah, I remember like in my Pilates experience, there was a lot of like, I thought to be like odd cueing. And I think it was just maybe like that the communication of the breath around the system maybe wasn't consistent or really dialed in yet as the system was evolving and different like certifying bodies were kind of putting all the parts together maybe. But I think some of the literature that's coming out over the last few years about breathing has really made available, I think, more of a scientific approach that links like the physiology of the body to the breath. That's been really helpful for, I mean, myself personally, and I know a lot of others that have tapped into some of this literature that's been out there.
Yeah, and that's informed the breath practice that I do.
Gotcha.
That comes more from a lot of the studies have been started in the early 2000s, but it's becoming more mainstream, like available now.
Is there a certain like teacher or book that really moved the needle for you in your education around breath?
Yes, there is. The technique that I practice is called the Oxygen Advantage.
Okay. And Patrick McCowan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patrick McCowan. He's an Irish guy. Him and James Nestor both, you know, have these, they're like these leading forces in the breath world right now. And both of these books are amazing. Patrick just came out with a new book called The Breathing Cure. And it's a like more comprehensive book than his older books. It's newly released, I think a couple of weeks ago. It's awesome. It has all the science. It has lots of information about how breath work can help heal different things more than asthma. It can heal more than asthma. And Patrick was, for years and years, he still is, but his work stems from a method called the Buteyko method. And Buteyko was a Russian doctor. And Buteyko just started studying breath, and he was studying patients that were critically ill, and he found that no matter what the disease, the people, as they got sicker, their breathing would become more and more labored. So he started being curious about breathing. And that's what Patrick was trained in. And then I did some Buteyko method training before I found the Oxygen Advantage. And I was doing some Zoom sessions with this woman in England, and the Oxygen Advantage, to me, the difference between the Oxygen Advantage and the Buteyko method, I think Patrick has improved on the Buteyko method a lot. They're just a little bit more hardcore and very strict about the breath hold. So
you mean the Buteyko is?
The Buteyko is.
It's more like a lifestyle for them, I guess.
Well, it's a lifestyle, but they also want to push you to complete apnea, which is terrifying for an asthmatic. It's completely terrifying, right? So they want you to go for as long as you can. And I think with as somebody with who has asthma, that's just too scary. So the Oxygen Advantage has more of this like kind of Goldilocks effect that they want. They want you to push yourself, but not to the point where it's like terrifying or like you'll get dizzy or something like that.
Gotcha.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the Buteyko method. I just think Patrick made it more accessible. He made it more tolerable for me personally.
So if I recall, maybe I'm getting this wrong, Buteyko is basically breathing in slow. It's all through the nose. Most breath practice all seems to be through the nose, but it's breathing in slowly, but not very like deep in location, but not in volume, but then
Correct.
Really dragging out exhales for as long as possible and really not rushing to inhale.
Correct. Exactly. And it's also breath holding.
Right.
Difference with the Buteyko.
And when you're new at it, it's terribly uncomfortable. I mean, it's like, it can be really like a unsettling sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Then you like, in my experience, it's almost like you break through that and you get to this other place. Like it's hard. And then it's like, oh, all the hard went away. And now there's a sense of calm.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what's going on. And the Buteyko method is a little different from some of the other breath hold practices in that you always hold after the exhalation. So there's breath holding. And then what you were just describing is called air hunger, where you're trying to breathe so lightly. The imagery is like back before there was electricity and you were like a singer, you had a candle and your sheet music. And you had to, sing and breathe so lightly that you wouldn't blow out the candle or something.
Oh,
so, you put your finger under your nose and you breathe so lightly and gently that you don't feel any air on the inhale or the exhale on your finger. But that's a practice. That's a technique. That's not how they want you to breathe all day.
It's like when you're exercise. It's like that's being at the gym for the breath.
That one, the air hunger, I don't think you can totally do while you're exercising.
I mean, it's like when you're devoting specific time. So it's like not a all day long thing. It's
right. That's you're sitting down to practice.
Right.
Now I do that air hunger while I'm like watching TV or something, cause you don't have to pay like total attention to it. You can just be like, just kind of feel if you're breathing, and you can also like do it while you're doing anything else. Then there's also like some in the Oxygen Advantage, there's resonance frequency breathing, which is cadence breathing. So you're breathing in for 4 seconds and you're exhaling for 6 seconds. So you're trying to balance your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system.
Gotcha. So you use this in basically reversed asthma that you had the majority of your life, or?
So I'm on the way to healing. So it's not healed yet. I still become breathless doing some activities, but now I have a strategy to recover from that. So like I practice handstands. I do an online class with some Canadian gymnastics school on Wednesday night. So I was doing that last night, and the handstands are really hard, and we'll do handstand holds and handstand drills. And occasionally I have to come out of the handstand because I'm like feel myself starting to inhale too forcefully. And I feel myself inhaling too frequently. And so I have to come out of it. And that's basically what starts asthma, is that you're just inhaling too fast and that you're actually breathing in too much air, too much volume. So I come out of it and I kind of put my hands on my ribs and I practice this cadence breathing, that 4-6 breathing. And it's actually training the diaphragm.
Gotcha.
So I have strategies for dealing with the onset of asthma. I think that it's going to take a while longer to cure it. I have to keep the practice up every day for a few years.
But we cut out there a little bit. But do you feel like your practice has at least allowed you to, I guess, like move the needle where your baseline like level of asthma has changed?
Oh yeah. I mean, the first thing I did was I started taping my mouth shut at night about 4 years ago. And ever since I did that, I haven't needed an asthma rescue inhaler at all. Like I don't.
That is so amazing. That statement. Like, you know, one of the things that this channel that I guess we're passionate about is like empowering people to play a bigger role in their own like sense of well-being. And I think there's so many people out there that just have no clue. Like we just were never told asthma is something that you have control over.
Yeah, my asthma doctors never told me this. The medical industry doesn't care about this stuff because
there's no money in the fix.
Right. But if I, you know, if I had been, you know, a kid and when I found out I had asthma and somebody was making me do this, they would have to make me do it because it's uncomfortable, like, you know, but my life would have been different. You know, I was running marathons with an asthma inhaler and I was taking puffs of this thing like 12 times a day.
Oh my.
And it's steroids, you know, my hands were shaking and.
But yeah, my grandfather, I mean, that was, he basically died from steroid use for decades of just treating asthma. And
they tell you that it's safe and that you can use it your whole life.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Of course not. Yeah, it's crazy. Well, yeah. I think it's a really inspiring story. I'm thinking about some people in my life now that are suffering it that I have been trying to nudge to, like, you know, you can do something. You know, it's hard, delicate balance when you do a lot of learning about like health related stuff as a, I don't know, a health enthusiast.
Yeah.
You know, balancing that line of trying to help someone and just annoying them with information they're not ready for. You know, you don't want to like ruin a relationship because you're trying to say, hey, try to help yourself. But it's so exciting to hear that we can take control over something like this that, you know, is really unknown. And now I guess it'll be more and more known with these books kind of rolling out the way they are.
I think it's going to keep getting more and more popular. Like the, you know, I just finished a month ago, the training to become an advanced oxygen advantage instructor. And Patrick would, you know, say he was just talking to James Nestor the night before. And James Nestor, who wrote Breath, is saying that, you know, Stanford is calling him. These schools are now interested in this stuff. I don't know when the medical profession is going to catch up. I mean, I have access through this training to like hundreds and hundreds of articles, peer-reviewed scientific articles that prove this stuff. So scientists have studied it. It's just a matter of the medical industry not telling anybody about it.
Well, they're not really incented to.
That's true.
They're not really in the business of teaching people how to heal themselves. So,
yeah.
But people are waking up and realizing that, you know, they can play a bigger role. So there are more self-healers, I guess, emerging, learning that they are their best doctor if they, you know, are willing to do the work. You know, that book, Nestor's book, is it Breathe or Breath?
I think it's Breath.
That was great. I listened to that on Audible, and it was great because it was this nice balance I found of the science around it and learning about like the Bohr effect and, you know, all the mechanics. And but it was like juxtaposed with the process of him going through these studies. And there's this, I guess, kind of comical Danish guy he was going through with it. And it made it for a very entertaining way to learn about something very important. You know, it was like a little bit of textbooky, but a little bit of a kind of a funny novel almost. And
yeah,
easy to digest.
He's got a great writing style. And so I recommend his book to everybody. Patrick's book has some anecdotes in it that are stories, but he's not a journalist like James Nestor. Right. So his Patrick's book is a lot more scientific, where it's like a lot about the Bohr effect, about this like oxygen hemoglobin disassociation curve and all of these, you know, very scientific things. So I would recommend, you know, people reading or listening to Breath. And then James Nestor does explore some other breathing techniques in there, which, you know, I think are okay for other people. I personally don't think that the Wim Hof or anything like that is right for me. Because I'm still, I'm still on my journey with curing asthma, and those hyperventilation techniques like that are interesting. And I understand their, you know, the science of those techniques is to stimulate an immune response, right? To heal other things in the body, and the cold baths and stuff, or to like stimulate some things that are dormant. But at the same time, I think you have to have a healthy level of breathing before you do that. You have to be able to have a good breath hold.
Yeah, I was doing Wim Hof for a while, and it was definitely a great learning experience and, you know, really useful. But then I found, as I practice with a fraction of the amount of like inhale effort, I was able to accomplish pretty much the same length in breath holds, where I feel like that was the real value of the was from the breath hold. So it was like, why do what you with brute force, what you could do with finesse almost. And I found like I settled into just this subtle finesse version, which later I learned is kind of born out of pranayama practices that go back. Like, this is not something new. It's just kind of being rediscovered. Could you, or we mentioned the Bohr effect for a little bit. It seems like that's a big component of this. Do you feel confident in like giving a brief description of what that is?
Yeah, definitely. So the Bohr effect is named after a Danish scientist named Christian Bohr. And the whole gist of the Bohr effect basically is that you need a certain amount of carbon dioxide in your bloodstream to make the hemoglobin molecules release the oxygen. So, you know, if those, everybody has those like pulse oximeters you can put on your finger, they put them on you in the hospital. You're going to, every time you put that on, unless you're critically ill, you're, it's going to say something between like 90 and 99. You always have that amount of oxygen in your blood. So it's in your red blood, and oxygen, when you breathe it in, binds to hemoglobin in your red blood cells. The hemoglobin really likes oxygen, so it tries to keep it. And if you don't have an adequate level of carbon dioxide in your bloodstream, your oxygen's going to stay in your blood, and it's not going to get released to your all of your organs and all of your tissues.
And is that because there's like no, from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, there's no sensor for oxygen in the body. The sensor, so the signal is carbon dioxide. So we rely on the carbon dioxide to signal to release oxygen from the hemoglobin into a cell.
Yeah, into the tissues. Cell. Exactly. So you're like, you know, you're never going to have 100% oxygen in your blood, but you're right. We have chemoreceptors. Like there are all these like receptors that signal to your brain what your blood pH is, right? And what the mixture of gases in your blood are. And they're looking for carbon dioxide. So they're like you said, they're not sensing the oxygen, they're sensing carbon dioxide.
So with that, the impression I got is we're basically in through practicing trying to build like carbon dioxide tolerance so that we could walk around with more carbon dioxide so that there's just more oxygen being moved into cells when needed.
Yeah, basically we want balance. So what's happened is, you know, like when we're children are breathing, most children, unless like, you know, they had something happen in utero or something, they're breathing normally. But as we get stress and we talk nonstop, we let go of too much carbon dioxide, right? And then your respiratory center wants to keep everything the same. So it wants to keep, if you're hyperventilating, right? You're breathing in too much oxygen and it wants to keep it the same. So it doesn't allow for you to tolerate carbon dioxide. So basically we're just trying to get balance, right? Because none of us are balanced if we have a short breath hold, right? You have too much oxygen and not enough carbon dioxide. So the oxygen is not getting to your tissues. So yeah, you have a high like sensitivity to the carbon dioxide if you can't hold your breath for long, or if you have breathing dysfunction or asthma, you're like highly sensitive to it. I think a cool analogy is somebody who is like, this is where the hunger part comes in again. So you're you've eaten already, but you don't have, what is that hormone? Ghrelin or something, whatever that
ghrelin.
Ghrelin. Yeah. So that's not signaling you that you're full. So you keep eating. And that's what happens when you breathe. You're not getting the signal. And then your metabolism wants everything to stay the same. So it's hard to lose weight, right? And then your respiratory center wants everything to stay the same. Even if the thing, you know, the system, the homeostasis is not healthy, it doesn't want to change because it's how it's always been and it wants it to stay the same. So you have to force things to change sometimes, you know, and you have to do these breath holds and you have to force your respiratory center to tolerate and your system to tolerate the carbon dioxide.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that.
I hope that what was clarifying enough.
Well, I mean, in some ways it seems simple. In some ways it feels complex, but I know, like, personally, it's very clear that it's a very powerful tool. And I think it's so awesome that it's free and we all have it. Like, I feel like no matter what somebody's situation is, I think a lot of people are out there on some kind of healing journey. And I feel like no matter what it is, what you're trying to healing from, you can probably get some percentage better just from, you know, devoting some of the minutes of your day to nothing else but practicing strengthening this tool. I mean, you could do it a lot quicker than it would take to, you know, drive to the gym or drive to the Pilates studio and take a class. I mean, it doesn't take long. And my guess is that frequency would be more important than, like, duration. Like, I think doing, you know, a few minutes, a few times a day is probably more powerful than 20 minutes once a day. And, you know, we could always find a few minutes to, you know, for ourselves if it's important.
Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. So consistency and, like, how many times a day you're doing it is more important. There is a really interesting number though. So they've studied that if you do 5 long breath holds, and all of these breath holds are over 30 seconds, after 5 long breath holds, those involuntary contractions of your diaphragm, they activate your spleen. So your spleen starts producing and kind of kicking out more new red blood cells than it was before. And it does that for the next 3 hours.
Oh, no kidding. That's interesting. Yeah. And for those listeners, 30 seconds, if you're unpracticed, might sound like overwhelming, but it's not. I was actually just working in the gym with Sarah and one of her her friends, who's like a colleague Pilates instructor at our brick and mortar location, and she's been having trouble and she's a bit of a mouth breather and feels like, and she listened to something that I think it might have been something from Patrick McCowan, because she was told to, like, test her breath hold and she couldn't do it, you know, for just, you know, it was just a few seconds. She couldn't make 15 seconds. So I said, you know, give me a few minutes and I'll get you to do a minute breath hold. And, like, she couldn't really believe that. And they, like, finished their workout. And then I said, all right, you got a few minutes before you leave, lay down. And I just kind of coached them through this simple thing. It was like 10 breaths in and then a breath hold. And the first try she did it, it was about 30 seconds. And on her second set, she got about 50 seconds. And Sarah was doing it too next to her. So they, like, were both totally calm after that and was like, what just happened? And it was amazing. It was like, it was a 5-minute tutorial and you're able to hold your breath for longer than you could have imagined just a few minutes before. You would have never thought you could do that. Like, and I've gone through that, like, not deep dives with my clients, but just, like, little introductions like that. And they all do it. Like, everybody holds their breath for about a minute or longer the first session, usually on the second set.
I mean, I'm not sure what you're doing, because I'd love to see it, because that, like, the breath holds took me months to get to 60 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And I was doing 5 breath holds 3 times a day.
So what were you doing to prep for the breath hold? Like, was there a...
Yeah, there's a series, there's a technique to it. So you do, in the oxygen advantage method, you do, you get ready for it. First, you take your Bolt score. Your Bolt score is where you hold your breath after an exhale, and you let go at the first muscle contraction, whether it's your diaphragm or your throat muscles. So that's like a normal, when you have your first sense that you need to breathe when you're holding your breath.
And you're doing that just to get a baseline.
That's like your baseline. Before.
Okay.
So whatever that number is, you should
be able to- You said that's called the Bolt?
B-O-L-T, yeah, body oxygen level test.
Okay.
It's also called the control pause sometimes. So whatever that number is, you should be able to, that indicates that you could hold 3 times that long. So if it's 20, like if you get a contraction at 20, you should be able to go to 60, you know? So like you take that, you just get your test, you take your heart rate to see what it is at the beginning of the practice. And then you do for 3 minutes, you exhale, and these have to be normal exhales, not like the, not that kind of breath. So you just try to catch yourself on an exhale. You hold your nose and you hold your breath for 5 seconds. And then you breathe normally through your nose for 10 seconds. So it's 5-second hold, 10 second normal breathing. And you do that for 3 minutes. Then the next thing you do is you do something called a recovery breath. So the recovery breath is where you hold your nose for 15 seconds and you're bobbing your head up and down or turning your head side to side. And the movement builds up more carbon dioxide. So you're slowly introducing the carbon dioxide into your blood.
Just because you're creating a muscular contraction that creates a demand?
The muscular contraction, anytime you're contracting muscles, off puts carbon dioxide. So it's the muscles are giving off carbon dioxide. So there's more carbon dioxide in your bloodstream. So then you do that for like 6 breaths. So you're doing that head moving while you're holding your breath for 15 seconds. And then you do you do 1 minute of cadence breathing. So you're inhaling for 4 seconds, just feeling your rib cage slightly expand. And then you're exhaling, feeling it return to a little narrower position. And then you start doing your maximum pauses. So then your maximum pauses, you always try to hold after an exhalation. So then you see how long you can hold. And then in between each breath hold, you do 1 minute of cadence breathing, the 4-second inhale, 6-second exhale. So that's the whole thing I do every day, 3 times a day.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I was doing something a little different to get the long breath holds. So I'll do what I've learned as like a yogic breath, or I think it might be Bhastrika Pranayama, where it, to me, it feels like a very subtle version of the Wim Hof. So it is a deep inhale, but I'm not doing like 20, 30, 40 breaths, and it's all through the nose. So I'm not just blasting through hyperventilation, but maybe it is a low level of hyperventilation. It's, you know, so it's not really aggressive, but it is a full breath, and I'm really focusing on the sequence, like belly, chest, and then on like the, usually I'll, like when I'm teaching someone, I'll just have to do 10. And then on the last one, let it out as slow as possible and let the breath come to stillness. And it works every time. Like I'm amazed. And usually, so I would do, when I started, I was doing like Wim Hof stuff. I was doing these 25, 30 breaths and I would get like a 2-minute hold. But now that I've practiced, I could do 5 easy breaths and still get like a minute 30, minute 45 hold. And I'm like, well, I'm getting almost as good of a hold from a fraction of the amount of effort. I don't get all the like dizziness and seeing colors, which sometimes I like that. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, high on your own supply kind of thing. So, and there are times where I go for that and I'm like trying to induce some kind of spiritual experience, but for my go-to every day, I'm just like, you know, 5 to 10 inhales and then get a nice breath hold. And I'll do a few of them. And I've never done it where I didn't feel really glad after I did it that I did it. Like, it always feels good. It's 100% yeah. effective.
What it's doing is it's you're training, you're retraining your diaphragm, right? So our diaphragms, this as a Pilates teacher and somebody who deals with like backs and posture all the time, this part was like wild to me. This was kind of exciting. Was that and I've done dissection labs where I've like seen the diaphragm and I didn't even know this. So when you have hyperventilation, which is the same as asthma, which is the same as people who have anxiety, your diaphragm doesn't return to that domed resting position because you don't take the.
You cut out there a little bit.
Because you're just inhaling, inhaling.
I'm sorry to cut you off there. You cut out a little bit. Can you start that over?
Okay.
With the diaphragm?
Yeah, yeah. Can you hear me? Yeah.
I can, yes.
If you're just inhaling all the time, like an asthmatic, so you're inhaling too much, your diaphragm doesn't return to that full domed, like resting position. It's in a dome, like a jellyfish or something, like a parachute. And it's up by the bottom lobes of your lungs. And if you're just inhaling, your diaphragm's moving downward on the inhale. So your diaphragm becomes flattened and it loses its dome shape because it's not going back up to the ceiling, right? So what happens is that it starts to affect your back and your posture. So you don't expand in all, you know, all directions and your full circumference of your diaphragm because it's becoming atrophied. Your diaphragm, like any other muscle, can become atrophied. And this was like wild to me because I thought you could do it by exhaling harder. That's what my asthma doctors used to have me do when I was a little kid. You had to exhale and you had to push the thing, a little like ball up the tube or whatever.
I remember seeing my grandfather have to use one of those things, yeah.
Those things that doesn't train your diaphragm. The only way you can train your diaphragm is by breath hold.
So on the exhale is when the diaphragm goes back to that resting position.
Yes. And then I'm sorry, I didn't complete the excitement about the back part. I didn't explain that. Yes, it goes back up to the resting position. So the pelvic floor being this like curved shape at the bottom of muscles, and then the diaphragm being a, you know, dome shaped top of the tube here, you actually get, that's called your zone of apposition. So if you ever want to look it up later, it's ZOA. Zone, I always thought it was opposition, but it's apposition. So the zone of apposition is really your inner core unit. And if it's too small, if your diaphragm becomes flattened and atrophied, your fascia on your back, the fascia that's called your thoracolumbar fascia, it's basically the fascia in between your rib cage and your pelvis, that fascia becomes really stiff. So, it becomes stiff and kind of inflexible. So your back will be inflexible. These are our people whose ribs are forward, right? They're walking around and back bends. That's because those people most of the time have some kind of breathing dysfunction. And the breath holds actually training the diaphragm to slowly go back up to that resting position influences that thoracolumbar fascia, that fascia on your low back, and it makes it stronger. So the more you're breath holding, the pressure of the breath hold is pushing back into that fascia. And by pushing into it, it's making it stronger.
What do you think is like the underlying driver of some of this dysfunction? Is it just the fact that we sit in chairs too much and because our posture is funky, our mechanics are off, or do you think it's just the stress of life where we just can't like let our breath go?
I think it's stress. So, because I've also studied some cranial nerve techniques, and I think it's stress. So, you know, everybody talks about heart rate variability and vagus nerve and how the nervous system is involved in the breathing. And that's the biggest one. And personally, I found that like, I believe everybody should do what they need to do, but I'm not gonna go to therapy and figure out why I have all these stressors and why I've got asthma. I'm not gonna do it. It makes things worse for me. I just wanna address the problem. And you know, a stress could be like a little kid who's 4 years old is putting his hand by the stove and there's something cooking and one of the parents yells at the kid and the kid jumps, you know, that's stress. That kid just got stressed out, but it was for an important reason, right? So we don't learn how to deal with stress and how to counteract stress. You know, and those people that were like working on getting yoga in the classroom, that's wonderful. That's those kids would grow up with more strategies to deal with stress. Like we're always going to have stress, but it's how do you, like how you deal with it. And most of us don't deal with it. So we just get more stressed out. We start, you know, whatever bad habits we have.
Soothing it with something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all of those self-soothing things that are not healthy. You know, and then also like people that talk for a living, you know, I was never in chorus and I wasn't trained how to sing and like retain my breath. So we're talking, you know, we've been talking the whole hour. And as a Pilates teacher, I talk for a good part of the session. I try not to talk nonstop, but, you know, teachers who lecture, anybody who lectures for a living, you have to learn how to offset that. So you know, I've been trying to do just in between clients. My practice is I stop in between clients. I really do try to save that 5 minutes and I go do the 5 second hold, 10 second normal, 5 second hold, 10 second normal. I do that to my next client to reset my blood gases.
Yeah. I haven't been working in the gym much since it's almost a year now because, you know, life has changed. But I would always make it a priority when I was scheduling appointments to leave. The gym I work at is, it's in the lower level of an office building. It's a really nice facility, but there's no windows. And, you know, you're under artificial lights, you're talking a lot, and it is hard to breathe in a relaxed fashion when you're talking and giving instruction. And I would always make it a point, like leave 15 minutes between appointments to go upstairs, stand out in the sun and just kind of reset. And if I didn't do that, if like I couldn't because of a scheduling conflict, I really noticed even just working, you know, maybe 3 appointments in a row without any breaks, you get out of there and you're like racy, like your nervous system is all fired up in that like fight or flight mode. And like, I'll come home and it's a short drive from home. So like I'll get home from, you know, a triple shift or whatever. And it's hard not to take that stress home with you because it's 5 minute drive and it just, you haven't done it yet. So you're like coming from that environment and then like your family's there and they're all calm and you walk in and you're not. And you're right. We need strategy. So this is great because it's such a great like entry point to having a strategy that really anybody can introduce. It's a real like low hanging fruit for the masses. So it's exciting that this word is being spread.
Yeah. I mean, I'm super passionate about it and I'm going to keep teaching it. I don't remember being this passionate about anything since I found Pilates. Like I was like this excited about Pilates, still excited about Pilates, but like, this is amazing to me. You know, the other thing with that, this one breathing technique that we do in the oxygen advantage, the one I described earlier, where you hold for 15 seconds and you're moving your head, that's also known as the nose on blocking exercise. So people tell me they're scared to tape their mouth shut at night because they're like, my nose is blocked, my nose is stuffy. But this nose on blocking exercise, it works because the other, you know, we talked about oxygen and carbon dioxide.
You mean if you're just congested, like your nose is stuffed up?
Okay. It works like a charm because nitric oxide is produced in your nasal passages and nitric oxide is a vasodilator. So it dilates all of your veins and arteries and it actually opens your bronchial tubes. And so it pools while you're holding your breath and you're moving your head. It starts pooling in your nasal passages. And then when you let go, that nitric oxide is opening things up.
And you don't need a blue pill for it.
No, and you know that that's where the scientists who actually won the Nobel Prize, they were actually they were studying nitric oxide, and that one of the outcomes was Viagra, right?
Yeah, you know, I think I remember, Patrick, maybe I was watching just like a YouTube video, maybe he was being interviewed, and I think it was kind of early pandemic, and he was talking about nitric oxide as a really our first line of defense as mm-hmm. As an antiviral, and I guess an antimicrobial in general. Exactly. And how powerful just being a nose breather compared to a mouth breather can be to fight infection, because that's the entry point. It's created in the nose, so it's sitting right there for when pathogens come in. It's like it's the front line of the battleground.
Yeah, there's so many filters that air has to go through if you're breathing through your nose, right? You've got all your nose hairs. There's nasal concha. There's all these twists and turns that it has to go through to get down into your, you know, your lower airways. So it's highly filtered if you're breathing through your nose. It's not filtered at all if you're breathing through your mouth. Stuff just flies in there.
Yeah, and, it's wild. It just makes you wonder, like, what kind of dent something so simple could make on a global scale when we're all, you know, mindful of, you know, stuff floating around or whatever, and like how much more resilient we could be as a population, as a species, if we were breathing how we're designed to breathe.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. It's really interesting, and it, you know, maybe it's going to increase longevity because you're reducing oxidative stress in all of your tissues.
Yeah.
So what's
your general practice? You mentioned like what you do within a session. You do that once a day, twice a day?
I do that three times a day right now.
And how long does that whole session take you?
Takes me about 15 minutes.
Gotcha.
I couldn't hold my breath. My control pause was like 10 when I started. It was horrible. Like I was like, and I was like, what's going on? I was a marathon runner.
You know? Isn't that crazy?
I mean, but that just tells you like how, you know, I wasn't a great runner, by the way, but I was doing it. That was all willpower. Like I was huffing and puffing. I was like, you know, sometimes I would run for so long and I would make myself sick, like sick to my stomach, but I like loved running, but I was not efficient with running at all. Like it was horrible breathing with it. I was a horrible breather. And, you know, my practice has come so far. Like I walk now. I don't ever sit down doing the breath holds. Like I was sitting doing the breath holds at first because it was more comfortable and the oxygen advantage allows you to sit down. And then I got up to like 90 seconds, you know, for a while. And then I was pushed when in my training to start doing longer breath holds and to do them walking around. So Patrick makes you walk around. And when I started walking, I was back to like 20 seconds because the walking made it more stressful. And you're right. Like we talked about with the muscles, you're creating more carbon dioxide. But now I've been doing the walking every time I do the practice, and I'm up to like 70 seconds when I'm walking around and holding my breath. And I'm really happy with that. I mean, I'm going to keep improving. I'm pretty happy as somebody who couldn't hold a breath for 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's some awesome progress. I know that you have a hard stop coming up. You have an appointment. Is there anything else you'd like to like share with the audience or let people know how to reach out to you if they want to learn more about the courses that you take or?
Yeah, definitely. People can find me on Instagram at Erin Pilates, or people can email me at thepilatesartist@gmail.com.
And that's Erin, E-R-I-N
Pilates. E-R-I-N. Yes. Okay. I'm starting a Tuesday night class. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. It starts this coming Tuesday next week. And it's going to be the whole technique that I was talking about the whole podcast. And I'm going to teach people how to do it. And if people stick with it every day, that's great. But the class will kind of help you stay on track. So
cool.
I needed that at first. I needed to be in a class with some motivation. And then I started feeling better and doing it on my own, but it helps to get, to make sure you're doing all of the techniques correctly too.
And if they want to sign up for that class, they could do that through your website.
Yes, they can do that through my website. And if they're having trouble doing that, they can email me again at thepilatesartist@gmail.com. And I'm doing some private Zoom training if anybody wants to do that. I do suggest checking out Patrick's book, because like you were talking about, Les, you can actually cure more than asthma with this breathing practice.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. I'm definitely looking forward to his new one. And I recommend folks out there to, if you haven't listened to Nestor's book,
mm-hmm.
And I recommend listening to that one, because it's really well narrated. I find it fun. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun read. Well, Aaron, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day today to help spread some of this breathing wisdom and telling a little bit about your story. And I think it's just really awesome to hear the course you run and the improvements you're making with your own health and teaching others how to do the same. So really, so really grateful to be able to help you spread that message. And maybe some of our listeners will come check out that Tuesday class and see what other services you offer. For the listeners out there, I want to thank you again for tuning in. Always grateful for your listening. And I hope everybody out there has a terrific day.
Well, thanks again for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I did. Erin seems like an absolute delight, and it seems like she's really fighting the good fight and spreading the good word out there in the world. So as you guys know, breath is a big part of my life, and I'm always interested to see how other people are using it as a tool, as their medicine, a way to improve their life. So I hope you got some value out of that. Some other things to share. We do get a lot of support at the channel that we're very grateful for, and some people aren't really sure the best way to support us. So we always appreciate those donations, so thank you very much. But I really think the best way to support us, if you haven't yet, is to join our membership. It's really reasonably priced, and it's a growing community, and it's fun. We started some monthly live classes where Sarah and I are kind of guiding folks through usually there's an intention setting, a reading of some sort, some breath work, some nervous system work, some gentle movement and stretches, and then a final guided meditation by Sarah. And it's just kind of neat that we're all going through it at the same time all over the world. So I encourage you to check it out. I do think it is the best way to support the mindful movement and become more of a part of the community. And if you are a member out there and you feel like you're getting something out of it, please share that with the audience. Maybe you can inspire others to join. Another thing too is I have been opening up a little bit more one-on-one coaching. I have not put it on the website yet because just being really cautious of how much time I'm allocating towards it. I was a little hesitant at first when things shifted gears a year ago and kind of went online, because I wasn't sure that I would really be able to do my best virtually with my one-on-one clients. I am have a history of being more of kind of just a hands-on worker, but I've been doing it a little bit, and I think it's going well. It's actually, I think, exceeding my expectations, so I am excited to offer that to others. If you are interested in that process, then shoot me an email, and we'll see if it's a good fit, and I can go over pricing and expectation and what that looks like. But as a starting point, they're generally in 5-week doses that have a weekly call that's with me about 75 to 90 minutes. There is homework. You will have something to work on it's kind of a lifestyle shifting process. And all the things that we talk about, mindset, movement, nutrition, and recovery, are all integrated into that journey. So it's not for everybody. If you're the type of person that doesn't really like changing the way you spend your time, then it might not be the right fit. If it's someone that wants to just be have a cheerleader to tell them to do push-ups or something and doesn't want to know what they're doing or why they're doing it or how to do it, that's probably not a good fit. But if you are open-minded and you have a growth mindset and you like to learn new things and you're really looking for someone to help you really facilitate a space for you to grow and cultivate your own practice, then let's chat. It might be a good fit. So again, thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate all the positive feedback I'm getting, and thank you for the reviews. Please keep them coming. And if you know anybody that you think would enjoy this conversation, then please share it. Have a great day. Thanks.